Okay, all right, so we are holding on Lamed Zayin Amud Aleph. We're holding on Lamed Zayin Amud Aleph about sort of the way down the almost the line against Nafka. Okay, we left off like this. We had a couple of different opinions. We had a couple of different Tanoim talking about how we know that Sidon Shoyad are placed on the left arm. We had the Tanakama pointing out that you have a number of psukim where you have Yad and Yamin contrasted, so therefore, obviously, Yad must, in general, mean the left hand. We had Rabbi Yossi Achorim arguing with that and saying you find that the right hand is also called Yad, and the common answer in the back is only called Yad Yamin, it's not called Yad plain. And then we had Rabbi Nosson making the hekesh between Muxaut and Muxaut, and the person writes with their right hand, therefore you tie on the tefillin with your right hand, therefore they go on the left. Okay, so the last thing we said was, where is Rabbi Yossi Achorim voting that it's on the left hand arm? And we said, okay, he can use the same answer as Rabbi Nosson. But another answer to that is Rabbi Ashi. Rabbi Ashi says, here is another way of explaining it. You can say that Rabbi Ashi, that Rabbi Yossi Achorim has another way of learning it. Because you have, again, it says four times in the Torah that you have to put on tefillin. And in most of them, it says the word yodcha is spelled normally. Yod, dalad, lamed. But then you have, in one place, at the end of Parashas, v'hoi yakiviyacha, that we say in Rabbeinu Tam's tefillin, it says v'hoi l'chola oitha yodcha, and there it's spelled yod, dalad, chokhe. So that's yod, dalad, chokhe. So therefore, So therefore, we can garrison that the word yodcha means yod keha, the weaker hand. Okay, stands for the word keha, which means like dim, or in this case, weaker. So yodcha, yod keha means the weaker arm. So therefore,
in one word.
So yeah, it's in one word. But therefore, we can garrison it that. I don't have a chumash over here, but that's you look in the siddur later on. You'll see it. You'll see it. You look in the siddur and then park that we say in Ravina Pastron. Anyway, so. So it says Yabcha, so therefore we can dash in Behe, means Keha, it means the weaker hand. So therefore, so that's another way that Rabbi Yossi Achorim is able. That's another way that Rabbi Yossi Achorim then says Ravashi, that's another way that he's able to learn it goes on the left. Why? Why? We have many times when the Chachamim darshan a word that's written with a hey as if it was written with a chet. A hey and a chet look similar, as we learned before. They said that originally the idea was, and my father may still do, they sound similar. No, in other words, the point is, not the cloth of Yod Chah, but the hey. In other words, you can darshan as if God said Yod Chah, which would darshan means Yad Keha, the weaker hand, but rather just the opposite, Yad Koyach. Yud Dalad Kok, and then the hay turns into a chet. The stronger hand, so Abba, you should douch in it that way and say it means you put it on the stronger hand. Okay, because the hay, and you find many times that the Chacham will douch in a word that's written with a hay as if it was written with a chet and vice versa. The Yerushalmi actually says so in so many words. It says that the Chacham never have a problem douching a word and interchanging hay and chet in Jerusha. So the answer is, Omalei. So Rav Ashi answers in Mitzvah B'chet. Yes, but the fact of the matter is it doesn't say with a chet. If you have that the Jerusha doesn't contradict the simple meaning of the pulse, it's fine. By all means, darshan it as if it was written with a chet versus a hey. But here, where the simple meaning in front of us is Yod Keha, the weaker hand, and then you want to darshan just the opposite, take the hey and flip it into a chet, you can't do that. Okay. So then what's the Ketanot? This whole discussion over here is actually like this discussion about what we're learning from the word yodcha, spelled with a chaf and a hey, that is actually, that there's actually a machloikas tanoim on that subject. Yodcha the hey is small. The Tanakama writer says when the word says the word yodcha, spelled again yod dalad chaf hey, unlike everywhere else where it's spelled yod dalad like a chaf, then it means zusmo, it means the left hand, because like you said, it means the weaker one, yeah. Achirim Omrim, and then Achirim, which is a mayor say, no, Yodcha the Rabbis is a Jidin. The word Yodcha, yeah, here in our Gemara, it's called Yodalad Langathoth. We learned at the end of Herodias, we had a whole story over there where a mayor and a Nothin together conspired to have, to force Rav Shimon Gamliel the Nothi to resign because they felt he's too overbearing, whatever, and then when, and then eventually they were thrown out of the Medrash for a while, and then they were allowed back in, but from then on, the name, they were given the names Acherim and Yesharim, respectively. Okay, anyway, the point is, so Acherim, Yodcha, we have it written in the Gemara here, Yodal Mangacha, if that's a mistake, it's supposed to be Yodal Tha, like we were saying before. Lodabis is a Gidim, so Acherim says that the word Yodcha, spelt like that, comes to include that also a person whose arm has been amputated, which Rashi says, the word Yodcha, besides that we said before, it means a weaker hand as on the left hand, it also means where the hand, the left hand itself is damaged and whatever. That even then you have to put on tefillin on it. So it comes to include somebody whose arm has been amputated. Tanya, just we learn in another bride. The eight. No, that's gidim. 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 It means to cut off. The shirt. It's related. You have the shirtish gimel dalad. The shirtish gimel dalad with various letters at the end of it means to cut off. Gidea is one of them. Gideim. God, Gedud, Yigudenu. Well, no, because they Gedud means a troop. They Gedud means a troop of soldiers. But no, you have those. Well, Gedud Ilama, you have in Aramaic. Yeah, you have in Aramaic, for example, you have the Russian in Daniel, Gedud Ilama, chop down the trees. So, yeah, the shirtish gimel dalad means to cut off. So, yeah.
With okay. $2 to do, that is
then it would mean something else. Yeah. Okay. You have a drasha also. You have a drasha that God was born with a Brit Mila because all of the Medrash says, because all of when Leah says, for God, same thing. That God means cut off. So he's born with a Mila already cut off. All right, anyway. Onward. I don't know. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, onward. Maybe it has to do with, we were talking about the other day, that shade of God was particularly careful with the mitzvah of tefillin, and we said, we were bringing yesterday what the smag says, about the connection between tefillin and Brit Mila, the two oysters, so maybe that's the thing. Maybe he was born with Brit Mila because his descendants were also going to later on be careful with the second oyster tefillin. I don't know. Anyway. Okay, Tanya Yidach, we learn in another bride, that Eimoy Zroya Potemir tefillin, if somebody does not have a left arm, then he's potter from tefillin. Acherim say no yodcha l'rabbis v'gidim, that the word yodcha comes to include somebody whose arm is cut off. Okay, so one second. First of all, Tosfos says that in this last braisa, the Chachamim and Acherim are not necessarily arguing. They can be talking about how far down was the arm cut off. Is it below the bicep, or is it above, or is it in or above the bicep, where therefore the muscle is what you put the film on. So the Chachamim in the braisa would be saying, the whole arm or from the bicep and down is missing, then he's potter. And Acherim would be saying that if it was cut off only from here, let's say, then he's still chayav to put on tefillin on the stump because you can't wrap it on the arm, but that's not the active. If you have a good deal of discussion on the postkin about all these questions, the person is missing their arm or parts of it or whatever. One thing is, we just said it has to be the weaker arm. But if a person, if you can have, for example, a case, let's say, for example, if a person is missing part of their right arm, then of necessity they're doing everything with their left hand. So then on the face of it, they should be putting tefillin on what remains of their right arm because now that's their weaker hand. So you have that.
The hand should be included.
Yod, we're going to say soon. We're going to explain soon how we know that when it says al-yod doesn't mean on the hand, it means on the muscle. We're going to get to that soon.
But at least it has to include
that. No, not necessarily. Not necessarily. The fact of the matter is all that's required of Yalotha is that the tefillin be on the muscle and then held in place by the strap. Everything else that we do beyond that, two other windings that we do to make a shin over there, and the seven windings on the arm and everything is all a matter of minutes. Now we had the Gemara before where we had the explanation of what the different Amoraim did with their Ritzua, where we had Rashi explaining that was referring to the Shorosh, and then everybody else explaining hanging them behind him, etc., and Tosfos explaining that it refers to what they did with the Shoyad. So we're saying, okay, one of them would wind it around his fingers, another one would also tie it in place over there, etc., but all that is not strictly required of the halacha. Some of it is halacha, but it's not ma'akiv with tefillin. All that's ma'akiv is that it goes on the arm. Yeah. Okay. So we mean the arm, yeah. So the point is, you say Zroya. So we're guessing. Hold on, no. Zroya actually means before. Okay, wait. Hold on. We'll get to it soon. forgot to say. Okay. Anyways, from this Gemara, you have a great deal of discussion among the Rishonim and Achronim and the Poskim and everybody about what exactly, as I mentioned yesterday, that Sanachthedeth had three Tshuvos in Ur HaChaim back to back dealing with these kinds of questions where a person is missing all of their arm, or part of their arm, they're missing part of the left, they're missing part of the right. What do they do as far as sin? Okay. Turn it up on. Eat there. A left-handed person, maniach tefillin v'yemino, he puts tefillin on his right arm, shuv smolo, because for him that's effectively his left hand, because it's his weaker hand. We just said before, tefillin has to go on the weaker hand. Now, actually, it's interesting. You have before when if we learn it from Yod Ha, like Rav Ashi said, then sure, that means that applies. If we learn it from what Rav Nosson said before, that we learn it from Okshavtam Okshavtam, that you write with your right hand, therefore you tie off tefillin with your right hand, therefore they go on the left, then it might come out, maybe not, because then you could argue on the one hand, does Rav Nosson mean each individual person, some individuals write with their right hand, some write with their left hand, or does Rav Nosson mean most people write with their right hand, and therefore, according to Rav Nosson, it might come out that regardless, everybody has to put tefillin on their left arm, whether they actually write with it or not. You have my focus among the Rishonim, how to learn that. Would Rav Nosson disagree with what we're saying now, that and say that even a lefty puts on tefillin on their left arm, or would Rav Nosson agree because he's saying you go according to how the individual person writes? Okay.
So the question is,
are we talking about you individually write with your left hand, therefore you use your left hand to type tefillin on your right, or does he mean most people write with their right hand? Yes. Okay.
If I write with the hand, I think it's a very hard time.
So then if we learn that way, it would mean that Rav Nosson would say, even though you personally write with your left hand, most people write with their right hand, therefore you're still going to take your right hand and use it to tie the tefillin onto your left arm. Okay. Anyway, so, v'hotanya maniach v'smoylashu v'smoylashu v'adam, what do you mean? We have another braisa that says that a lefty puts their tefillin on their left arm, same as everybody else. Abaye answers that second braisa is talking about a person who's ambidextrous. So therefore, you go back to the normal thing. Everybody puts tefillin on their left arm. For him, there's no particular reason to put it on his right arm. To put it on his right arm because it's not any weaker than the left. Now, Shainton, a true lefty would tackle put tefillin on his right arm, I suppose, for the thing. And as I mentioned yesterday, you have all the machlokes in about all the cases where a person does certain malachas with one hand and certain other one and other ones with the other one. What would you do then? The machzedek writes in the Trovus over there that sometimes such a person might in fact have to put on two shalyas. Okay. Yeah. I think actually the Machzedek mentions in his Trovus over there that one of his own sons was in that situation. He was ambidextrous and he got to put tefillin on both arms. Yeah. Okay. Chana Dvei Menashe, Al Yodcha Zuki Boris, when we say that you put tefillin shoyad al yodcha, means you put it on the muscle, on the bicep. Bein Einecha, and when it says you put tefillin shorosh, Bein Einecha, Zukodkoid. This means, doesn't mean literally between the eyes, it means at the top of the head, above the hairline. Hecha, so we're going to learn soon how we know this concept, but first we're going to deal with the actual placement. Hecha, so what does that mean on the codkoid? What does it mean where on the head you put it? Amid Ve'erab Yanim, Mokam Shetinik, Shemoyche Shetinik Roisik. Means you put it, the highest you can put it is the place where baby's skull is soft. Roisik actually means that it's pulsing. If you look at a baby's head, you can see it's pulsing over there with their heartbeat. So because the skull isn't fused there, that's the highest place where the tefillin can go. So they start at your hairline and go up from there, and the highest they can go is that mokum shemoyche shaltinik reifik.
The lowest
is the hairline. Like, we're going to learn on Omen Bay how we know that it doesn't mean literally bein einecha.
So the hairline
was... No, where the original hairline was when a person had their full head of hair. Yeah, even a person goes bald afterwards. Yeah. No, you just know. You can feel. Yeah.
It's a moving proposition.
Yeah, come on, but that's whatever. Incidentally, Tosfos gets into a long discussion over here. You can see there's a Tosfos Kiboris over here that goes on for quite some time about the whole question of which muscle do we mean? I mean, we all take it as a given. Of course, it means the muscle over here on your upper arm. the process discovers it possible, and they bring some people who want it, who claim that it means actually the muscle on your forearm, that maybe you should be putting it on there.
Okay.
Well, no muscle, but here, it's not much muscle. Then this is it. The fact is, it's a muscle. Kibbutz says doesn't actually mean a muscle. Kibbutz, the fundamental meaning of kibbutz is a large lump of flesh. Well, very well, you have a lump of flesh here, and you have a lump of flesh here, so. Yeah, okay, fine. Granted. Yeah, of course, right. Tosfos also gets into that connection, into the whole question. You have in a number of places in Gemara where it mentions various joints of the arm, which one is which. For example, you have Gemara that mentioned the marpek. Is the marpek the elbow, which is how it is also in modern Hebrew, or Rashi in some of those places explains that marpek means the shoulder. Then that also gets... Tosfos also mentioned, by the way, in that connection, Tosfos mentioned briefly the question about just like we can talk about with the arm, what color is the zroya, we can also talk about with the leg, what color is the shoik, which is relevant as far as various halachas, one of them being the issue of shoik v'isha erva. When the Gemara tells us in Brachos that a woman's shoik can't be uncovered, what is the shoik? Is it the upper leg or is it the lower leg? Yeah, big difference, and that's you have the machlokes on that. That is why eventually you have the compromise position that most everybody follows is the skirt has to go to below the knee to cover the complete upper leg, and then below that you have to wear tights or stockings or what have you. So that way if you say the shirt is the upper leg, it's covered by the skirt. If you say shirt is the lower leg, it's covered in.
Where do we keep the upper leg?
Yeah, Tosfos brings some different possibilities. That shoik could conceivably mean the upper leg, or conceivably it could mean the lower leg. Anyway, okay, let's go on. Bominik Plimoy Mirevi. Plimoy was one of Rebbe's Talmidim. Asked Rebbe, Mishiyesh leShnei Roshim. Somebody has two heads. The Ezenen Maniach Tzvilin. Which one did he put Tzvilin on? So, like, do you say the same thing? Does he maybe put Tzvilin on the left head because the same way as he put Tzvilin on the left arm? So Rebbe was very okay, well, that's it. Yeah, this is the Plimer from Kedushin, and this is also from Tzachim. Yeah, he appears in a few places in chat, yeah. Okay. Omalei, so Rebbe was very offended by that. He thought Plimer was making fun of him. He tells him, Oi kum gli, either get up and go into Golos, because for being mavaza the nasi, oi kabo lach shamta, or step on yourself nidri for the same reason. So you're being mavaza, I mean, you're coming to hack me a train. And Tosfos says, in fact, in this world, you don't have such a thing. Now you're going to ask the Siamese twins. One answer is that, yes, Siamese twins where the bodies are joined together, for example, that you have, but that you have is one body, and there's one body, and the only thing that's separate is the two heads. That is a very, very rare thing, and if they do, they don't even live very long. You have cases like that where you have cases of Siamese twins who live long and healthy lives, but that's where more of their bodies are separated. Here, if the entire body is together and you only have two heads separate, they're not going to live very long. So therefore, Rebbe is offended by the question. Like, a person is not in that condition, is not even going to live long enough to be able to put on film. Tosfos brings, by the way, from the Medrash, that Ashmedai, the king of the Shadim, brought up from underground somebody who had two heads and brought up the Shlomo Malach. Later on, this guy, being the Shadim themselves, a half-human, half-Malach, this guy later on married a human woman. He had a child that had two heads, like him, and then he had other children with another wife that had one head. And then eventually, at the same time, the guy died, the father, the Ched, died, and the children are going to divide the Yerusha, and they were arguing among themselves, this one with the two heads, is he considered two people or not? So they brought the case to Shlomo Malach. The Tosfos stops over there and doesn't tell the rest of the story. Shittubuk Rebbe fills in the rest of the story. Shlomo Malach says, take some hot water and pour it on one of the heads. And but see which one cries, and both of them start crying out in pain. Shlomo says, in that case, only one person. There is, by the way, a vast amount of discussion among the first Machronim about the whole issue of Siamese twins. Are they considered one person or two? It's negated to a number of areas in Halacha, of course. But anyway, so over here, so Rebbe. I suppose, maybe. An interesting question that I saw that comes up in this connection is, would they be allowed to get married? You're not allowed to have relations in front of somebody else. If you consider that they're two people, then neither of them is going to be allowed to get married. No, some of them do. You have some. No. Even now, I'm saying the ones we're saying here, the ones where they have one body but that has two heads, that kind is not going to live for very long. We're saying, but there are other kinds. There are kinds where they only join from the waist down. There are kinds where they join at the chest. There's different. The original Siamese twins, for example, were like that. They were joined at the chest. They got married and had children. They were good, you know. So, you know. No. They stayed together. They didn't have the technology. They didn't have the medical knowledge in those days to separate them. They lived their whole lives joined together. But, and they got married and had children. So it just means, I mean, okay, whatever. Yeah, they found that they made it work somehow. But yeah. Anyway, so you know, it's okay. So yeah. As a matter of fact, by the way, the Kungli, the stone Kudshin, says, given what Joseph is saying, that underground you can find by the shading, you can find such things. Maybe that's what Rebbe means when he says Kungli. Doesn't just mean going to Golos the Kafara. He means going to Golos to a place like that where they have two-headed people and then he can ask the child. Okay. Adahachi, as they were talking, Osahu Gabra, a person comes to ask the Shaila, Amalei, I had a boy born to me, who had two heads, so now this is done. Minashamayim, that Rebbe should see, that Slimmer is right, that such people exist in the world. Kama ve'inim lameis of l'koyim. So now he's my firstborn, how much do I need to give the koyim? Do I need to give him 5 slayim or 10? Osahu Sava, so as soon as the old Talmud Chacham came, Tosfos mentioned some places that might be Elio, I know he's turn away, and he told him a braisa. Yes, chayev listen my yud sloim. Yeah, as a matter of fact, you're going to have to give the kohen 10 sloim because both of them are considered bechor. Rashi brings up that point. Bechor, maybe one of them was born before the other. Rashi says, when you have two separate twins and you're not sure which one is born first, then we say, Eepshalot Samson, you don't know which one came out first. Necessarily, one came out a split second before the other, therefore, you only have to give 5 sloim. Here were two heads on one body, we can assume they both came out together, and therefore we tack out to the 10 slayer. Okay, so wow, Amy, is that so? Well, Tommy Rami Bachama, Rami Bachama Torah Breiser, Mitoch Shinera Podet Tifta Eis Bachor Adam. Now you have the Pasuk says you have to be Pidyon again. Shemea and you have to be Nisra for Sot Lamed. So you would think that applies even if the baby was Nisra during the 30 days. Rashi explains that Nisra means the baby was killed during the 30 days. Now, let's say, ripped apart, Nisra, literally is ripped apart by an animal, let's say, whatever. Tosfos has a discussion about that, I'll get to that in a minute. Anyway, so you would think, even if the baby died within a month, you have to still do Pinyin again. That's the question. You would think, once soon as a bar is born, you have to do Pinyin again. Yeah, you only do the Pinyin again when the baby is 30 days old, but you would think, even if the baby died before that, you should still, when it comes to the 30th day from the birth, you should have to retroactively do Pinyin again. No, because the pasuk says ach chodei sitta, therefore cholak, so it makes a distinction. Now the point is, Rashi says, in this case the baby is still alive, but he's not going to live for very long with two heads. Therefore, on the face of it, based on Rashi Bachama's advice, you shouldn't have to do a pidyon aben. And yet, Hahu Sava is saying not only after, but you have to give double as much. The answer is shiny hafa. Yeah, but it's different when it comes to pidyon aben. The gogolos cholarachmana, because the pasuk says that it depends on the head. Kamnesis shkolim la gogolos. Here, there are two heads. Okay, eventually the baby is not going to survive, but right now comes 30 days and the baby is still alive. So therefore you have to go and therefore you have to do Pidyon Aben and you have to give 10 slots. Yeah, Tosfos has a number of problems with Rashi's explanation, and Tosfos ends up saying that no, Nitra means not that the baby was killed, but rather that the baby became a Tresa. So the question is that over here, we're saying that a baby with two heads is not going to live for very long, so therefore effectively it's considered a Tresa. And the answer is again that as long as it's alive, okay, it is a tracer. For certain other purposes in halakha, we wouldn't consider this a viable baby. But for purposes of pidyon aben, the fact is it depends on gogolos, and therefore you have to give. But yeah, the kid's not going to live long enough to yerusha realistically. But I mean, if it came to that, yeah. I mean, if the father died within 30 days, yeah, this baby would yaushin his portion, and then when he in turn dies, then his brothers will yaushin it. Yeah. So if you mean like a person is not going to live, is not going to live for very long. A person is not going to live for 12 months. No. That's a baal mum. They say a verse on this, by the way, that for this reason, when Moshe counts the 12 shvatim at the beginning of Parshas Bamidbar, so each time it uses the word that he counted on the gugaloisim by their head, as opposed to when it comes to Shevet Levi, which are counted from a month old, it doesn't say that word why, because there's a verse, I don't remember from who, that says that's the reason. Because we're saying over here, a person with two heads and the rest of the body fused together is not going to live for very long. The Nei Yisrael counted from 20 years and up. So by that point, there's no two-headed people over there. You can count them, the Google Oysub, and it's unequivocal. Each head counts as one separate person. Mashenki Melavim, a count from only a month old, you could have, as we're saying over here, you could have a baby who lives to be a month old with two heads. So therefore, Moshe couldn't be counting them, the Google Oysub, because sometimes you'd have two heads, but it's considered one person, and it would only count as one.
But the Levim are always counted as players.
The Levim over there in the Midbar were counted from a month old. Yeah, there's a Medrash that says actually you find a number of times the Shevet Levi is counted sometimes even before they're born. The Yecheved is counted as one of the people who went down to Mitzrayim, and she was born as they're coming into Mitzrayim. You have a couple of other examples as well, including in Divrei Hayamim, you have one that lists the heads of the 24 Mishmaros of Levim, and one of them is listed over there, even though he hadn't been born yet. What? They have it in shape of the Sheishin, Levi's daughter. Yeah. Okay. Onward. Omamar, Yodcha Zuki Boreas. We said before that when he says you have to put tefillin al Yodcha, it means on the muscle. You know him, so where do we know that? So like this, the Tanan Abaran. Al Yodcha, when it says that you put tefillin al Yodcha, Yugoyva Shibagat. That means the higher part of the hand. So further up the arm. Maybe it means literally on your hand.
Yeah.
No. We have to consider like this. The Torah tells us you have to put tefillin on the arm and you have to put tefillin on the head. Therefore, there's a similarity between them. Just like when it comes to the sharosh, you put it on the higher part of the head. You put it, as we said, above the hairline. As we're going to explain soon, having a bene necha doesn't mean literally between the eyes. You put it on the highest part of the head. Close to the highest part. Afkan begoyva shabiyat. The same thing over here. It has to be on the higher part of the arm, so not on the hand, but rather higher up. Yeah, in fact, this is what you're saying. You don't put it all the way at the top. Well, for that reason, the tefillin shoyat, you don't put them on the shoulder either. You put them on the muscle, which is a little bit below that. And you have, by the way, based on... That, you have actually in Shemush Rabba, it says, you're showing and bring from Shemush Rabba, that specifically it's supposed to be on the lower half of the muscle. So like this, I mean, our tefillin nowadays often are large, they end up covering the whole muscle anyway, but preferably it should be that the whole muscle extends from like here to here. You should do it as much as possible on the lower half of the muscle, because as the Gemara is going to say too, it needs to be near your heart, and that part is closer to your heart.
If it's already on Yadcha, it should be the upper forearm.
So that's close to discussing. I don't know what Aleph, the pros and cons of that, but again, if we say that it has to be Keneged Halev, then for that reason alone, it's more clear. Okay.
Tzibarot is close to that.
Nah, not really. The Halev is all the way up here. Okay. So that's one way of knowing that Shil and Shoyad go on the upper arm. Rabbi Yezer Omer Enes Tarech, Rabbi Yezer says, I don't need that limud, I have another way of learning it. Harei Omer V'hoya L'cholo'oi, the Father says that Tfilin Shoyad should be for you for a sign, implying L'cholo'oi V'loi L'achetamo'oi. They have to be a sign only for you, not for other people. Meaning, in other words, if you put them on your hand, literally on the palm of your hand, everybody's going to see them, because you don't usually keep your hands covered. And in fact, by the way, the same thing applies to the forearm. People usually wear short sleeves. People often wear short sleeves. So if you put it on the hand or on the forearm, it's going to be seen by everybody, and the point is the tefillin has to be placed in a place that usually is kept covered. So that would be the muscle.
That's why some people cover them?
Yes. As a matter of fact, that's the next piece of it. Rav Yitzchak Koyma Enes Tarech, Rav Yitzchak says, I don't need that rimud, I have another one. Harei Omer V'samtem Esvara El Alabah, Samuk Shartem, it says you should place these words of mine on your heart, and you should tie them on a tefillin, meaning should take simuk. And every day, you want to place them in a place where they're as close as possible to the heart, which is on the upper arm. And by the way, you said on Amar Aleph that a lefty puts on tefillin on their right arm. Now there, it's not going to be next to the heart, but that can't be held. Because, you know, you left.
Right.
Yeah, so it just means you put them in there, you put them at that height on the body, but even though it's, yes. Well, it's facing, it's not next to the arm. Rav Chia and Rav Acha Bredi Rav Ivya, Machaven, Umanachle Lahadi Lidya. Rav Chia and Rav Acha Bredi Rav Ivya, in fact,
this is
yes.
That then you should have it. It should always be on the left arm.
No, but that's what we're saying. The fact that it has to be on Yod Kea, the fact that it has to be on the weaker arm, that overrides the fact that it has to be connected on it.
How do we know it overrides it?
because we said before, that's what we said before, that's that, 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 that an
issue. Yeah. We didn't say why overriding.
Because that's how it is, because the Torah tells us al yosha, this that we're saying al lavaskan is a dirasha, it's a nice dirasha and all, but it's not, it doesn't, yeah. However, the chiyuver of Acha, brethren of Ivyim, mechavin of manachoy lahad ilibi, they would be careful to put on the tefillin exactly opposite, exactly by their heart, and also, Mephoshim say, it also means they would tilt it a little bit inward, as we do, so that it's literally when you put your arm by your body, then the tefillin are literally resting on your arm. Rav Ashi had a yosef kamei dam meimer. Rav Ashi one time is sitting as a Talmud in front of a meimer, had a siri of yode. Now a meimer had a sore on his arm, on his muscle, and therefore so he had made a hole in his shirt over there, so the shirt doesn't rub against the wound. But he had his tefillin on, so you can see the tefillin through the hole. Rav Ashi tells him, like, "Sovel a mile, chol ois v'lo lachem ois." Don't you hold this that we just said that the tefillin are supposed to be visible only to you and not to everybody else? Amalei, b'mkayim v'chol ois v'smal. So a meimer answers, and it doesn't actually have to be that it has to be covered. It has to be in the place which is normally covered. The muscle is usually covered by a person's shirt. In this case, where I have a hole and where I have a rip in my shirt sleeve because of the wound, then I'm allowed to do that. Nevertheless, though, the post can say it is you are in general supposed to keep it covered. In this case, you have an exception because you couldn't do otherwise. But in general, you are supposed to keep it covered. Well, when we before bar mitzvah, when we don't wear a talus, we don't because you don't really have anything to cover. Well, you do. I mean, some boys put their yeah. But and once we wear a talus, then yeah, talus is covering it. Yeah. The talus covers it mostly, yeah. But you usually also have it going a lot down.
Yes, yeah.
That's why. Yeah.
We don't do that.
Some people do, some people don't, yeah. Alright. Okay, next. Goyva Shabagosh Mendolon. Okay, so we've established how we know that Phil and Shoyad have to be on the upper arm. Now let's deal with how do we know that the Phil and Shoyad have to be on the higher part of the head, above the hairline. So the Tanah Rabbanan. Bein einechos goyva shabarosh. Again, as is the style in these braises, these braises are usually taken from Sifri, and this is the style. It brings, first it gives us the conclusion, then it works out how we know that conclusion. Maybe it literally means between your eyes, on the bridge of your nose, or right above it. No. Nemakan bein einechos. No, you have a greater shava. Here it says bein einechos. But nemakan, like the simu karcha, bein einechos mameis. It says that you're not allowed to make a bold spot on your head between your eyes for in grief and mourning over a mess. Malahalan begoyva shavarosh. Now over there it has to mean on the higher part of the head. Mokam sha'osa karcha, a place where you're able to pull out hair and make it bold. Because you don't have, most people don't have hair between their, literally between their eyes unless they have a unibrow. So of necessity, it has to be that it means the goyva shavarosh on the higher part of the hair, where on the higher part of the hair of the head where hair actually grows. The same thing over here. Tefillin has to be in the place where it's possible for it to become bold to pull out the hair, namely above the hairline. We derive it from zeta shava of loisa simul karcha bein einei. Then we said, once we establish that, then we derive the shoyad from it, that just like the shoyad is the goyva shabarosh, so the shoyad is the goyva shabiyad. Okay, Rabbi Yehuda ima enes sarus. Rabbi Yehuda says, I don't need that way of learning it, I don't need that zeta shava. I have another way of learning that the tefillin shorosh should be above the hairline. Omra Torah hanach tefillin v'yad hanach tefillin v'rosh. Because you have like this. The Torah tells us to wear tefillin on your arm, and the Torah tells us to wear tefillin on your head. Which means there has to be a certain similarity between them. Ma lahalan v'mokam aroi l'tami v'nega ahad. Now when you put on the tefillin shoyad, you're putting it on a part of your body which is subject to only one type of sarah. Most skin of the body, the only kind of sarah a person can get on it is the regular kind of sarah where the skin turns one of the four shades of white, or reddish white, and you can have hair, you can have white hair growing in or whatever, as opposed to you have another type of sarah that's Torah describes called nesek, which applies to the hairy areas of the body, the hair, the beard. So those you have different rules. We have many Rishonim hold. You don't even need skin discoloration over there. You just need that the hair falls out. If the hair turns yellow, if some hair that's left in there turns yellow, then it's a simen chumah, and the person is mochlat, etc. So those are two different types of tzaraas. So therefore, on the arm, there's only one possible type of saras. There's no saras of nephet because there's not enough hair there. It has regular saras buffet. What? Yeah, let's see the name. The same thing, where you put tefillin shorosh has to be a place which is only subject to one type of saras. As opposed to between your eyes, the ikabos of the sayer. There you have two types. You have over there that doesn't have hair on it, and then you have the eyebrows which have hair. The ikab sayer love and the ikanami sayer saw. There conceivably you could have a person who could become tamei saras with some of that hair turning white. And that would be saras basar, or they could become tame by some of it turning yellow, which would be saras of nefek. And therefore, so that has to be excluded because it has to be a place that subjects only one type of saras. The person is asking the question, so why not the forehead then? You don't have hair on the forehead. So maybe take it and put tefillin on the forehead where there's only skin and not hair. It's interesting. Tosfos starts with the question of im tomar, but doesn't give an answer. Usually the rule in Tosfos is if they start the question with im tomar, they give an answer. If they start with tema, then it means they don't have an answer. But here it's a bit unusual that they start with im tomar, but they don't give an answer. We have a couple of answers that Achronim supplier of Yaakov Emden says, because we know that the forehead is supposed to be the place for the Kohen Gadol sit. So therefore, it can't be the place for tefillin. In fact, we learned in Zvachin that the Kohen Gadol can wear the tefillin and the sit at the same time. So of necessity, it has to be that the tefillin goes above the hairline. The second tackle put it on the forehead. Yeah.
Why do you know we don't put the tefillin cannot cover the
skin? Because you have the shehem chafit there. That's the honest skin. So yeah, there has to be al. That's the al yotza and bein enecha without any chafit. No, but it's not. It's the covering as well. Yeah. Okay. All right, so now we're done with the sugya of tefillin. Now we're going to move on to tzitzis. Our Mishnah had said, arba tzitzis ma'akiv luisi, the last thing in our Mishnah, as far as parts of a mitzvah that are ma'akiv one another, we said the four tzitzis are ma'akiv one another. If you don't have all four, then the tzitzis are possible. Shabbat and mitzvah achas, because all four of them constitute together one mitzvah. Unlike tefillin, which we said before, tefillin shoyad and tefillin shorosh have two separate mitzvahs. It says all four of them together are one mitzvah. And then we have a Mishnah. It'll be Shmuel saying, no, they're four separate mitzvahs.
But all four
compartments in the Shorosh are part of one mitzvah. That is true. Yeah, he said that one of them is marked with the other. Okay, so the question is, my day nine. What's the nafkamina between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Shmuel? Whether you say that tzitzis is one mitzvah or four. Amar Rabbi Yosef sodden with tzitzis in the Naira. So Rabbi Yosef says, here's answer number one. If you have a linen garment, sodden means a linen sheet. If you put wool tzitzis on it, we're going to learn in the next paragraph, tchelas is supposed to be wool dyed, it's supposed to be wool dyed tchelas, specifically. It's wool dyed with the blood of tchelas. So therefore, if you have a linen garment, of necessity, you have to have tzitzis on it that are going to be wool. Now, normally that would be shat. So the question then is like this: according to the Tanakhama, that you need all four tzitzis, otherwise you don't have the mitzvah. Then therefore, if you only have three tzitzis on there, no good. If you put on such a beged, you're over on the issue of tzilayim. As opposed to, according to Rabbi Shmuel, sure, you're supposed to have four tzitzis on there. Obviously, even Rabbi Shmuel agrees with that. But he would say, if you only have three, you're not being the kind of mitzvah of tzitzis properly, because you have to have all four of them, but you're not over on tzilayim. So tzilayim means wool and linen attached together. So if it weren't for the fact that the Torah tells us by a hekesh, as we're going to learn in the next paragraph, that you wear tzitzis even when they're kalayim, then you wouldn't be allowed to. So like this, the machlokes says, the Tanakhama would say, since all four tzitzis together are one mitzvah, if you're missing any one tzitzah, then you don't have the mitzvah. Therefore, if you put on a tzodin with three woolen tzitzis on it, then you're being over on shatnez, and you're not being the kind of mitzvah of tzitzis. Whereas Rabbi Shmuel would say, you're being the kind of mitzvah of tzitzis to a certain extent, even not perfectly, because you're supposed to have four, but nevertheless enough that you're not over on shatnez. We don't. Well, we're going to learn in the next... Okay, so you have like this. The Pesuk says, I'll come to Begdeichem with the Roysam. So now, you have actually... The Rambam learns that the Godin... We're going to learn in the next paragraph, actually, in the Gemara, but the Rambam learns that Minas Torah, Beged only means wool or linen. All other fabrics that Rambam learns are only Chayiv and Tzitzis Rabbanan. a number of other Rishonim disagree with, but I'm on that and say that other sound books are Chayav Midoraisa as well. For example, cotton, for example, yeah. So we'll deal with the details as we go along, and then the first half of the next parak is all about the dinim of tzitzis. So the halacha is wool and linen is definitely daraisa. All the other ones according to the Rambam is only dirabon. So therefore, that's why we are mahaber to wear wool tzitzis, because that way we're mechayim the mitzvah on a daraisa level. The velt, many people in the velt wear cotton tzitzis, and according to the Rambam, they're not being mechayim the mitzvah on a daraisa level. Now, fine. I mean, in principle, the mitzvah daraisa is only if you're wearing a four-cornered garment, you have to put tzitzis on. So there's actually no requirement daraisa to begin with to wear a four-cornered garment. A person conceivably could go their whole life without being the kind of mitzvah of tzitzis, because it's not a chovas agur. However, the Gemara tells us in the next parak that it's important to be fulfilling this mitzvah. It protects the person at a time of anger and hashamayim. So therefore, the minhag eventually develops once styles change and people aren't regularly wearing togas and other four-cornered garments like that, and then the minhag develops to wear a separate beged that you wear tzitzis on.
So one second, are you saying actually that a pitera of a garment has to be wool and linen?
No.
Either one?
Wool or linen, according to the Rambam, is the definition of a garment in the Torah.
So what do we have to
It's okay. If you have tchelas threads in your tzitzis, which we're going to learn in the next paragraph, you're supposed to, not third. Tchelas by definition is wool, and in fact, with the technology they had in those days, they didn't really have a way of dyeing, of dyeing. It's dyed wool. Wool dyed with the blood of the chelas. Therefore, if a person has a linen garment, and it has four corners, and therefore it requires tzitzis, in the days when they have tchelas, necessarily such a garment is going to have to have wool tzitzis. So that's what we're saying over here. If such a garment has wool tzitzis, but not four of them, the Panakama will say that you can't wear it, and if you do, you're over on the issue of Kilayim. And Rabbi Shmuel, who says each tzitzis has a separate mitzvah of its own, will say that at least you're yoked to those mitzvahs, and therefore you're allowed to wear it. Okay. That's answer number one. Rabba Bar Hinam, a Talis Balas Chomesh Ikebenayu, another argument between the Panakama and Rabbi Shmuel can be on the question if you have a talis that has five corners. So Rashi describes, but it doesn't have to be that, to begin with, it was made like a pentagon. Rashi describes, let's say, for example, a person took their tzitzis, a person took a four-corner garment, they cut one corner on an angle, so now you have two corners, one here and one here, where before there was only one corner. Yes. Actually, the Shittim of Kubesis brings the possibility that maybe we could also be talking about, he cut it like this, so now you have a right-angle corner over here and a right-angle corner over here, whatever. Let's say he cut it like this. Let's say he cut off a square from the corner of it. So now you have cut off that square, let's say. Right? So now you have two right-angle corners on there. Anyway, so the point is now the garment has five corners. So the question is, so according to the Tanakama, you only have to have four tzitzis, no more. The four of them constitute one mitzvah. Therefore, you would only put four tzitzis on such a beged. Rabbi Shmuel, who holds that each tzitzis is a mitzvah of its own, he would say, in that case, you have to have five tzitzis on such a beged.
As for the number of corners,
right. Ravina Amad Rav Huna Ikebenai. Ravina says a third possibility. Rabbi Shmuel and the Chachamim can be arguing about regarding the din that Rav Huna said. The Amar Rav Huna, Hayosah B'Talus She'enim Tziyesus Kilchasa B'Shabbos. If somebody goes out on Shabbos wearing a talus that does not have proper tzitzis on it, Chayav Chasas, and he would be Chayav Chasas because he's carrying on Shabbos. If the tzitzis are kosher, then they're bottled to the beged because they're considered an ornament to the beged. But if they're possible, so they're not accomplishing anything for the beggar anyway, then, yeah, so, okay. So, right. Yeah, carrying the fringes, right. So, the point would be, in other words, that the Tanakama would say that means, for example, if it only has three tzitzis, then the person would be Chayav Chasas. Rabbi Shmuel would say, again, if it has three tzitzis, at least he's been Mekayim three out of the four mitzvahs. So therefore he's not being Mechal Shabbat, he's not going to be Chayav Chasas for it. Rashi says Rabbi Shmuel would agree with Rav Huna's basic concept. However, he would say, therefore, we can't apply Rav Huna's din to where it only has three tzitzis. We would have to apply Rav Huna's din to where the tzitzis are not possible for some reason. Possible for some reason. Possible. I mean, also, because they're too short or whatever. Okay. In this connection, Omer of Shisha B'Rei Rabbi, Haiman de Batre Leglume, if somebody cuts down his garment, so like we just said, he cuts off one of the corners, He cuts off one of the corners. Loy Ovid Vloy, and he thinks the fat way he'll pass there are consistent. Loy Ovid Vloy Slum. What he does is didn't count for anything. Shabia Talas Balas Chavash. All he accomplished is now it's a Talas of 5 Slums. And therefore now it's going to be higher than Sittis. 4 Sittis according to the Tanakhama and 5 according to Rabbi Shmuel. Mind you, actually, it says in Shulchan Aruch, it brings from the Sifrim, which says that one that has 5 corners is Potter, and therefore it says in Shulchan Aruch, well, clearly you shouldn't be wearing a beggar that has 5 corners, because then again, you have a topic whether it should have Sifrim or not. Omer of Masharshia, another din, Haiman just sire the gloom. If somebody folded his talus, so Rashi gives two explanations. One is that his talus is longer than it needs to be, so he folded it in half and then now you have, there's a folded, what used to be the middle of it, and now is a corner, and then he just sits this in that corner. That's Rashi's first explanation.
He folds the garment, or whatever, he folds over
a fold of it. Now you have a place which before was in the middle of the garment and didn't have sits on it. Now it's like a corner, and now he wants to put sits over there. That's the point. Loy Ovid, but like, what he did doesn't count for anything. My time, the command of Shaya is done. It's as if it's undone, because eventually it will be unfolded. That's Rashi's first explanation. Rashi's second explanation is that what he actually did is he folded over the corner itself to make it rounded. In other words, if a rounded corner is not high as it is, but in this case, instead of actually cutting it to make it rounded, he just folded over the edges of it to make it rounded. So we're saying that doesn't count for anything, because folds eventually get unfolded. But therefore, it's still higher than Kittis. It's still equally much higher than Kittis as well. One second. Sewing we'll get to in a second. Uchnan Nami, and we see also from Mishnah in Kalim, that folding things over is not enough to make them have a change in status in Hamotha. Kol Hamothis Atsuris, all skin bags, I think like water or wine or whatever, which are if you don't have the bottoms of them aren't sewn, if they're only folded and then wrapped around like with a rubber band or a rope or whatever to hold them closed, tohurdus, they're not metabol truma because you consider them as if they're open and therefore they don't have a cleat kibble, they don't hold anything. Chutz mishal arabim, except for the ones that Arabs use because they normally make them.
The skin bags.
They're the Arabs to begin with would normally make them that they're open on the bottom and then they would bunch the edges over there together and tie a rope around them. So those kind of makabel chumah, but most people are not. So this by the same token, we're saying over here, if you bunch together the corner or whatever, it's still considered as if it was unfolded. Omer of Dini Minahaja, Haiman de Chayte Leglume, how about now if a person sews up his garment. The same idea, in other words, he folded it, but this time he actually sewed it. Or according to Dashi's second explanation, it would be that he didn't just fold over the edges of the corner over here, he actually sewed them in place. What he did doesn't count for anything. In Issa, the Lemon Boyle, because in fact, if he doesn't need that part, then he should just cut it off and throw it away. The fact that he's folding it over, even though he's sewing it, shows that eventually he plans to unfold it and to take out the stitches and unfold it, and therefore we can't say that's a valid place to sit this, according to the first explanation, or according to the second, that it doesn't pass there at some stitches. The halacha actually, we're going to learn in the next paragraph again about this kind of concept, and the halacha is, as far as that second case, not really. If you do fold it in half and you sew it, even along one side, then already that new thing is considered a corner, and you can, in fact, place this over there.
That's right angle corner.
No, that's what, well, the fascists were talking about the right angle corner, right? In other words, again, you folded it over, you sewed it along the one long end, or along both long ends,
exactly.
then you're allowed to put this over there.
Oh, we had four corners.
Well, that's right. I mean, obviously, you still have there two original corners, and the two corners that were formed by the fold of it. You only put a total on fold. Okay, we said Rabbi Shmuel and Abbas and Arabic. We said Rabbi Shmuel says that the four sittis constitute four separate mitzvahs. Amr Rabbi Yehuda Amr Shmuel, halacha Rabbi Shmuel. so the halacha is like a Shmuel and all these things that we said before. However, the left hill, like I would say, however, the halacha is not like Shmuel in that. The halacha is in fact like a chachamim. All four sisters together are one mitzvah, and that means as far as the various dinim we said before, a linen garment with only three sisters is also because of shatnez. If you go out on Shabbos with a palace that only has three sisters and you cry a kratos, etc. So the Gemara tells us, Rav Dina have also a bas rib.
So today's fabric, that is funny.
Okay, so again, according to the Rambam, anything other than wool and linen is only chayav de rabban anyway. According to the other Rishonim, there is, I think, some discussion about, for example, polyester, where it doesn't, I mean, it can be made of threads, of course, which is how they make polyester clothes, but it doesn't necessarily have to be. We're going to learn in the next parrot about leather garments, where leather, it doesn't come in the form of fibers to begin with. So leather garments are possible and stitches. So you have, I think you have some posts in Achronim who say that polyester would be in the same category because it could be equally well made in sheets. It doesn't necessarily have to be made in fibers. I don't know. We'll talk about it. We'll bother.
They get into these fibers?
Yeah.
And that's what we're saying, wool and...
So again, according to the Rambam, only wool and linen. According to other Rishonim, also cotton and also...
Okay.
And then,
okay.
The fact that according to the Rambam.
Plastic garbage bag over here, kind of in the rain.
You don't need to put this on it, right?
Okay.
Ravina have a ka'ozo abasri to Ma'abra Rav Ashi. Ravina one time was walking behind Ma'abra Rav Ashi because Ma'abra Rav Ashi was a Rosh Shiva. The Shabbos of the Rigla on the Shabbos of the Regel, which Rashi says doesn't mean the Shabbos during the Yom Tov. It means the Shabbos. No, it doesn't mean Shabbos Kalamoid. It means the Shabbos when they would darshin the Shabbos, one of the Shabbos before the Yom Tov, when they would do darshining about the halachas of the upcoming Yom Tov. If it counted the chosei. So one of the tzitzis of Ma'abra Rav Ashi's palace broke off. V'loy amalei v'loy nibi, and Ravina didn't say anything in this game about it. Kab muscle they say when Ma'abra Rav Ashi got home amalei, then Ravina told him mehasim ishtik. Back there, one of your tzitzis broke off. Amalei and Ma'abra Rav Ashi says he honestly mehasim shibisei. If you had told me back then, I would have taken off my palace right then on the spot. The point is, in other words, because the halacha is like a panakama. If we held the halacha as a bishmal, fine, whichever tzitzis is still on it, you can still wear it on Shabbos. But because the halacha is like a chachamim, and Rav Huna was saying before that if you go out on Shabbos with a palace that doesn't have proper tzitzis, then a chayav chatos, so therefore he's saying, if you had told me, I would have taken it off right then, because you can't wear it on Shabbos. So the question is, why would he have had to take it off then? Now remember, in those times, their talus wasn't like nowadays you wear it over your clothes. Their talus was their clothing. So the question is, in that case, if he would have had to take it off, it would have been very embarrassing. He's standing there only in his underwear. Don't we say in a braisa that covered abrius, respect for human beings, is a very great thing. It overrides a loisa say in the Torah. So on the face of it then, the covered abrius, so he shouldn't have to be without his outer clothes over there, should override the loisa say of not carrying on Shabbos. They're right. The answer is Tirgum or Rav Bar Shabbat Hamed Rav Kahana, but Rav Bar Shabbat explained in front of Rav Kahana, that's not what it means. It doesn't mean that you can be doicha any loisaseh because it's covered up with it. It means specifically one particular loisaseh, the lav de loisaseh. We're talking about you're not allowed to disobey anything that the Chachamim say. Meaning, what makes it that we have to fulfill all the Drabbanan is that the Torah tells us we have to listen to the Chachamim. Lois Sosim, and Adjava, you're not allowed to turn away from anything that they tell you. So in other words, when you have, for example, let's say carrying Muktzah on Shabbos, you're allowed to override that because of covered up Briah. Rashi gives an example from the Gemara and Shabbos. For example, in those days, when they didn't have toilet paper and you had to use stones to wipe yourself, then you're allowed to carry such stones on Shabbos, even though normally stones on Muktzah, because that's a matter of covered abrius, and therefore it overrides the mitzvah of lois osur. But not to say that covered abrius would override a real lav d'oraisa, such as carrying on Shabbos.
Even though you can find stones anywhere?
The avonim kozolos are a certain kind, or shaped a certain way, or they have a certain consistency to them, whatever, smooth, or crumbly, or whatever it is. Yeah. What?
They're like,
yeah, okay.
We don't want to know about it.
Yeah. The ikad amri. Okay. The ikad, Okay, so all that is version number one of what happened. That Ravina only told Ma'abar Rav Ashi about this after he got home, and Ma'abar Rav Ashi is annoyed with him and said, you should have told me earlier. The Ikadam, another version of what happened is, Mehasam Amalei, that actually Ravina did tell him right there on the spot that your sitters are broken. And Amalei, and according to the second version, Ma'abar Rav Ashi answers him, my daika from the Shia. So what are you thinking? That means I should have to take off my clothes right here. So the question is, didn't we just say that only refers to when you're talking about being over on something that I've not something that I said? The answer is, according to this version, my brother actually wasn't walking in the Shifat Abba, he was walking in Kaimalus. So the issue of carrying in Kaimalus is itself only the Rabbanan, and therefore that we can override for covered up reasons. No, you can't fix it on Shabbos. It's on Shabbos. That's what we're saying. It was on the Shabbos of the day. Yeah.
Now, that you can wear a puzzle system if you
I think so. I think that's also part of the covered up. There's two different things anyway.
You don't have to take it off, and then you're giving the other one in the shower.
So there's actually two different things anyway. You were talking about a loisa, then breaking shower. To wear a beggar that doesn't have proper tzitzis on, and a person is mevatel on efter by that. To be mevatel on efter, that you can do for covered up reasons. Yes, you don't necessarily have to take it off right there in shul because it's a matter of covered up bria. See, we're talking about a loisa there. We're talking about cat rearing outside in the shifat ad in the palace that doesn't have yet.
So it would be okay in yakid, but it's not.
Well, and also we're saying in a canvas, we're saying it would be okay.
Very private.
Yeah. Right. No, the question isn't because a canvas is very private. The point is a canvas, it's only offered to carry them with your abundance. Okay. Hadron alacha koyma. But now this next tariff, we still have a little more time, I think. Okay. All right. So now we're going to continue on tzitzis. Now the previous tariff, how do we get into the whole thing of tefillin and tzitzis and all, is because we mentioned that the various components of a mincha have to all be together, and if not, then the mincha is possible. That led us into other halachas where the same thing is true. For example, that we said you need all the parashiyas in the mezuzah and all the parashiyas in tefillin. Now this tariff is going to deal with the other way around. Things where you have different components of a mitzvah, but one of them is not masked as the other one. Where you do have a mitzvah to have both components, but if you only have one component, the mitzvah is still doable. So the first example is tzitzis. Hatchelas einim akeres galavan. You have tzitzis. You have there's a mitzvah you have. We would say every day in davening, you have to have tzitzis, and you have to have the nusnu al tzitzis hakon of still tchelas. So there's supposed to be tchelas in there, but the tchelas does not prevent the lavan from working, even though you're supposed to have both. If you only have one or the other, then you make it all tchelas, or you make it all lavan in the case of right. Now, but you have, by the way, machloikas you're showing him how many, when they do tchelas, how many strings of tchelas are supposed to be in tzitzis anyway? You have machloikas you're showing him. Rashi and Tosfos say over here what it means is you have four strings altogether. You're supposed to have two should be white and two should be tchelas. Then you have other Rishonim who learn that, one string should be tchelas and the other three, and I think the Rabbah learns this way, that one string should be tchelas and three should be white, and the Rambam holds of the one string, half of it is tchelas and the other half of it is white. You die only half of it. So it comes out on well, in other words, in the end, you start out with four strings and then you fold them over and tie them to make eight things that stick out. So according to the Rambam, only one of those eight would be tchelas. The other seven would be lavan. According to I think the Ravid, you'd have two of them would be tchelas and six would be lavan. And according to Rashi and Tosfos, it would be four and four. The Tosfos gets into a long discussion over here about when we say over here, tchelas enim akeres is a lavan. Does that mean, in other words, if you don't have tchelas, that you make these tzitzis out of only two wool, out of only two white strings? No, that's not what it means. It means that you make it out of all four strings. You still need the same number of strings. You just make them all white instead of some of them tzitzis. Okay, so if I love an animal of a tchelas, similarly the white doesn't prevent the tzitzis. If you don't have white strings, then you make your tzitzis out of all tzitzis. Neither one is ma'akad the other, right? Similarly, Tefillah Shal Yad Einem Akevet Shal Rosh, Shal Rosh Einem Akevet Shal Yad. Similarly with the Tefillin, even though you're supposed to, as we learned before, you're supposed to put on the Shal Yad first and take it off last, but neither one is Ma'akev the other. If you only have one, or you're only able to put one on for whatever reason, then you only put on that one. Each one is an independent mitzvah. Which that's the thing. So it's just mentioned that what it means is, even though the Mishnah is putting them together, there's actually two different, there's two different meanings of these two different parts of the Mishnah. When it comes to tzitzit, it means you have to have a full number of strings. They're all going to be wider, they're all going to be tailored. When it comes to tefillin, we're not saying you put on the shoyad, and then if you don't have a shorosh, then you put on something else to represent it. No, you only put on the shoyad, and similarly with shorosh. Bring more still, okay, bring more still. Lema masnitzin the loy kibben. Should we say that our Mishnah is not like Rebbe, this that we're saying, that the Tchelus and the Lavan are not active one another, sounds like not like Rebbe. The time he has, we learn in a bride. So Ura Isem Oy, say when the Pasuk says you could see it, so first it mentions that you have the white thread in the Tchelus, but then it says Ura Isem Oy, so you could see it, which implies that it's all one thing, that's all one single thing. Malama Chema Akvin Zez Zed Yuri Rebbe. So Rebbe says that means they're active one another. So Chamlam and Ema Akvin. So on the face of it, our Mishnah is not going like Rebbe. And first, before we get... No.
All the strings are considered one.
No. Well, that's what Rebbe is saying. So therefore, in other words, you have to have two components of one mitzvah. So just like a mincha, you have to have the flour and the oil and the levain, otherwise it's fossil. And just like a mezuzah, you have to have both parashias and so forth. So also Rebbe is saying that when, on the face of it, when it comes to tzitzit, you have to have both levain and chalas. Yeah. So first, before we get to the answer, we first have to figure out my time of the Rebbe. Why indeed does Rebbe hold that way, that the Tchelus and the Lavan are ma'ak of one another? Dichtiv ha-konach min konach, because like this, you have the Pasuk starts off by saying that you have to put tzitzit ha-konach, implying min konach, meaning in other words that the tzitzit has to be the same type of thing as the material that the corner itself is made out of. Which means, we're going to talk later on, that so Rashi actually explains what it means. It means the fabric. It means, for example, a wool garment needs wool tzitzit, and a linen garment needs linen tzitzit, and for example, also a cotton garment needs cotton tzitzit, etc. But also it means as far as color. So Rashi says most people's garments, at least in those days, were made out of linen, and linen is not dyed. So therefore, of necessity, linen has not dyed. In those times, they didn't have the technology to dye linen in a way that the color would stick. So when it says hakonach means min konach, means on the one hand, it teaches us that the tzitzit has to be white like the garment, but then on the other hand, it's still the chelas. On the other hand, the pasuk says that you have to have a thread of blue. And then the pasuk continues, you should see it, implying ad ikatavayu b'chad. So therefore, it means you have to have both of them in one. So if you're missing one or the other, Rebbe would say it's no good. Where's the Rabbanon? Would answer, Re'isam Oysa means Kochav B'chode, Mashma. The Rabbanon says, Re'isam Oysa means you should see it, meaning each individual component. You should see the white, or you should see the Tchelas. Neither one depends on the other. You don't have one, you do the other one. So therefore, Lema D'Leika Rebbe. So again, should we say our Mishnah doesn't go like Rebbe? If we're saying that in our Mishnah that you have to have, that you don't have to have both. The answer is Amar Rebbe, Hoda Amar Rabba, Filo Temer Rebbe, Lo Nitzrucha El Lekabe. Even Rebbe, when our Mishnah says Ein Ma'achin Zez Zez, it doesn't mean that you can have only one of them. Rebbe would hold you have to have both of them. But the Mishnah is talking about as far as which one goes first. The Rashi says that what it means is, in other words, Rashi learns that we're talking about as far as putting the threads into the hole. You have to, given that we're saying, as we're going to say now, you're supposed to put in the lavan before the tefillah. So Rashi learns that's what it means. When you stick the tzitzit into the hole, you're supposed to stick the white threads in and then the tefillah thread. Other Rishonim argue with that and say that can't mean what it means. It means that ultimately, after the tzitzit are made, nobody's going to know which one went in first. So therefore, they explain, we're talking about as far as the windings. We're going to talk later on in the Gemara about the windings, the kulyas that we do around the tzitzit. So the idea is, we're going to talk about later, that because again, the beged itself usually is white, therefore you should first do windings using the white threads, and only afterwards start doing windings with the blue threads. In other words, well, in our tithis nowadays, we do all the winding with one thread. We have one extra long thread, the shamash, but you don't technically have to do that. Technically, you can use different threads at different times to do the winding. So when they made tithis with tzelus, then the Rambam describes, and based on the Gemara later on, that is how they would do it. They would start by doing the windings with the tzelus, then switch over to the lavan, and then at the end, oh no, the other way around, start with the lavan, then continue with the tzelus, and then finish off with the lavan. But yeah, so we're saying over here, in other words, our Mishnah is not saying, so if you learn our Mishnah according to the Chachamim, then it means you can have lavan without tzelus and you can have tzelus without lavan. If you learn our Mishnah, like Rebbe, then what it means is you do have to have both, but the Mishnah is telling us you should have lavan first, closest to the garment, but if you didn't, if you started doing tzelus winding first, then it's okay. The Tanya, as we learn in Hebrew, the mitzvah l'hakim lavan l'tzelus, the proper way of doing the mitzvah is to do the white windings first and then the tzelus, or according to Rashi, to put in the white strings first and then the tzelus. The impikdim tzelus l'lavan yasa. If you did the blue before the white yasa, ela shechitah mitzvah, but you're missing a mitzvah. So you have to explain my chitah mitzvah. What mitzvah are you missing? Ilay mechitah mitzvah l'lavan the key mitzvah tzelus. So does the braisa mean that in that case you're missing the mitzvah of white? It's as if the white, the flower wasn't placed. The key of mitzvah is tzelus, and you only accomplished the mitzvah because you placed it afterwards, right? And you're going to argue the braisa means you only accomplished the mitzvah of tzelus. Well, that doesn't work. The Rebbe is called him the Asavad. We just said, according to Rebbe, you need both. So if we were to consider it as if the white threads don't exist, or we consider it as if the blue threads don't exist, according to Rebbe, you don't have proper tithes. Yeah. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav, what it means is shechita mitzvah also mitzvah. Right, what the braisa means is, he's missing the mitzvah of doing it the right way. He's supposed to put white and then blue. However, but also mitzvah, however, he did accomplish the mitzvah because the fact is you do have love on and you do have tzeilah. So he's missing, because in other words, you have a mitzvah to do them in the proper order. You have a mitzvah to first put hakonof, min konof, to put something of the same color as the beged first, and then afterwards do the tzeilah. So like this, he's missing that mitzvah by doing them out of order. But nevertheless, he has accomplished the mitzvah of...
Because of min konof.
Because min konof means that it should be the same color as the konof. So that braisa can also work according to this. So what do you mean? But umay chisim mitzvah. So what do you mean in that sense? What mitzvah is he missing? Jolayavim mitzvah namulcha. It means that he didn't do the mitzvah in the best possible way. The best possible way to do it is white first and then blue. And like this, he did it backwards. So therefore, he didn't do mitzvah namulcha. But the mitzvah is still accomplished. Yes. Okay. So the question is, alchein up love under any ma'akel as a chela. Fine. And in that case, going back now, so we're saying in that case. Then if we understand the braisa that way, and we understand the Mishnah that way, I can understand what we mean that lavan is not ma'akev tzelus. In other words, that if you started with tzelus instead of with lavan, then you didn't do the mitzvah the right way, but nevertheless you yaita. Tzelus, ain't ma'akev is the lavan, ma'ihi. What do you mean, though, that the tzelus is not ma'akev the lavan? You're supposed to start with lavan. So what do you mean, then, that the tzelus, according to Rebbe, that you need both tzelus and lavan, what do you mean? Tzelus is not ma'akev the lavan. You start with lavan. So in what sense are we saying that if you did the tzelus, then yeah. The answer is, Omer Rami Bachama, Le Nitzrecha, El Talat Shechol Tzelus. The case would be, we need the case of the Mishnah, it's talking about a case where the talus itself is all made out of tzelus. So therefore it's the other way around, therefore then you start with tzelus swing.
Oh.
Yeah, because it's supposed to be Minkana. So therefore, in that case, we're saying, you could make it. No. Still tzelus means you have a thread of tzelus on the tzitzis. Fine. You could conceivably have a talus that's made all out of tzelus. You could conceivably. You could take a lot of wool and you dye it tzelus and you make a talus out of it. Kodok got 250 of those for his followers, you know, so yeah, it's doable.
Because that was... Yeah,
they must have had to use a lot, yeah. So in that case you're supposed to put tchelos first. So the Mishnah is telling us again that if in that case you put love on first, then it's not ma'akim. You didn't do the mitzvah in the best possible way, but nevertheless you are yet.
If you have a talus, it's my nami,
and in fact we have a discussion about this among Amiroyim to understand this. That the Mishnah says that love and tchelos are not ma'akim each other. Amar Levi to Shmuel, but Levi says to Shmuel. Aryeh Rashi says is a Russian melech, like Gur Aryeh Yehuda. Shmuel is a melech, because he's an expert in dinim amenis. Loi teitz v'akara, don't sit down, So until you explain me the following thing, until you explain me the following explanation, what does that mean? Again, according to the Chachamim, it means very straightforwardly. You don't need tchelas strings. You can have kosher tzitzis with only white strings. You can have kosher tzitzis with only tchelas strings. But according to Rebbe, that you have to have both of them in order to have kosher tzitzis. What does the Mishnah mean? Amalei, and Shmuel answers them, like we just said. Lo nitzrucha el sodin tzitzis. We're talking about the chiddush is when you have a linen garment, which again is white, which needs tzitzis. The mitzvah lakdumi lavan beresha. The proper way of doing the mitzvah is to do the white threads first. My time hakonof min konof. Again, because you should have min konof, you should have the same color as the beged first. The e aftim chelas lavan. But if you were to do the chelas, putting in the chelas strings first, according to Rashi, or winding the chelas first, according to everybody else, less than well, then there's no issue with it. You didn't do the mitzvah in the best possible way, but the mitzvah has been accomplished.
So what's the difference between this one and...
But no, we're saying that before we were figuring out logically that's what the Mishnah means. Now we see explicitly, now we see that Shmuel actually explained in front of Levi, who himself was a Talmud of Rebbe, that yes, this is what the Mishnah means.
Where is Shmuel
standing? He's standing in the Mishnah, I don't know. Yeah. I don't remember actually. I remember the Gemara you're talking about. Okay, so then the question is, Tenach Lovon the Enim Akav of Tchelos. Okay, that explains one half of the mission, that the Lovon doesn't prevent the Tchelos from being kosher, that even though you did them out of order. What do you mean the other way around? Chelas doesn't prevent the lavan from being kosher if you're supposed to start with lavan. And omalei Rami Bachama. And again, Rami Bachama answers, like we said before, lo nitzvah el talus. You call chelas, we're talking about a talus, which is all made out of chelas. The mitzvah like doing chelas b'reisha. The proper way of doing the mitzvah is to put chelas first. Da'akonaf min konaf, because again, it should be the same min as a beged. We ask them, lavan b'reisha. But if you put the white first, less one lavan is no problem. However, okay, so far we're explaining that the whole thing is as far as the order. Which one goes first, white or tail? However, Amar Rava Midi Tziva Kagarim. However, Rava says, is it the color that's the important thing? No, because most clothing is white, therefore, regardless, you should always be doing the white windings first. Even in this particular case, you have a talus, you call it chelas, nevertheless, you should still go according to according to the Rav, and put the white strings first. However, Amar Rava, the Rava says, no, you can't explain the price, you can't explain the Mishnah that way, that we're talking about if you did blue first versus you did white first. Ela, Amar Rava, because you go by the Rav. L'nitzucha el gardumin. What the Mishnah is talking about, according to Rebbe, again, who says that you need both white and chelas, he would say the Mishnah means that if you have some of the strings broke off, the gardem tchelas. So if the tchelas got broken off, if some of the strings tore off, the koi lovan, and you have the white ones are left, the gardem lovan, the koi tchelas, or the other way around, the white strings got shortened, but the tchelas are left, less one brother, there's no problem. The Ami Bnei Rav Chiya, because in fact we see that Bnei Rav Chiya said, there's no problem with tzitzis are still kosher. The tzitzis are still kosher. Even according to Rebbe, that you need both white and you need chelas, but if one set of strings got ripped and you have the other set, then you're still okay, because to begin with, when the tzitzis were made, the strings were still their proper length. Hold on. The Ami Bnei Rav Chiya, because we find that Bnei Rav Chiya said, Gardume Chelas Kshedim, Gardume Ezek Kshedim, the stump, by the way, Gardume is the same word as Gidin that we had before, where a person whose arms were cut off. Yeah. No, okay, sometimes the race falls in there, even not part of the Shurish, but the word Shirit comes from Shedim. Okay, anyway. So Gardume Chelas, the stumps of the Chelas, Kshedim, are still kosher as to this. Gardume Ezev Kshedim, also the stumps of Ezev that are used to sprinkle parad in the water are also kosher, even though they also have a minimum shear to begin with, but if all you have left is stumps of them, they're still kosher. So the Kamashir judgment. So now the question becomes, okay, how much of them does have to be left for them to be kosher? It has to be long enough that you can make. It has to be long enough that you can make a bow tie with it. Rashi actually learns. It's fourth verse. Rashi actually says that it would mean kvelan is kolachotin. That it would actually mean that you'd have to have enough. Rashi uses the expression that you'd have to have enough length in them that you could tie all eight of them together, which would mean a larger amount. No, the halacha is that it means each individual one has to be long enough, has to have four svaros of it. So that's the question. We're not saying that it has to be all of them. Iboyelahu, so we have the question. Today, la'anvan doesn't mean la'anvan kulu ba'adadi, doesn't mean long enough that you can tie all of them together, which would be a larger amount. Or do you have a kol chad b'chad b'chodei, or maybe it means each one individually? So the answer is teku. We make on this and we say that it's as long as it's enough to tie only one of them. Boy, Ravashi, so Ravashi asks, what about alimi d'loy ma'ambi? What about if you have six fitness strings? So they're too thick. When you have only four bars left of them, you have only a tefach of them left. It's too thick to be able to make a bow tie out of it. The E have a T, but if they've been thinner mi'anvi, then you would have enough length. My, what's it in? They should be even more cautious because they've seen more. The mitzvah is still even more noticeable because they're thicker threads. They're even more noticeable than they would be otherwise. So therefore, they're kosher in that case, and that's takad halacha. If a person has thicker than normal tzitzis strings, and one of them gets chopped off, and all you have left is four spokes of it, even though, practically speaking, you can't make a bow tie with it because it's too thick, but had it been thick, you would be able to, therefore, it's kosher. Because it's thicker, and abidaba, that means they're more noticeable than thinner.